This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Bunch of good guests already today. But our next one, we share something in common.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah, we do.
We were both verified on Twitter, much against our well wishes, quite frankly. Yep. And so we bring on Luke Hancock.
That's right.
In Louisville. Luke, I wasn't happy about it. My partner dropped the bomb on me this week. That got the check mark. And then lo and behold, I see you got the same deal. So we tried as long as we could, right? We held out as long as we could.
I'm with you. This is totally against my will. I'll tell you, Wes, when you just did that intro, that is the first time I realized that I had the blue check mark. I thought Pack and I were going to hold it down and just be unverified for as long as possible, but they swindled me.
Nope. You boys are out there now. Y'all are verified. Y'all are real people now.
Yeah. Changed my life. Changed my life, Luke. I can't speak for you, but you know what? It's just all been downhill since, man. I just nothing better than having a blue check mark beside your name to make you really feel like you're somebody, right? Ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Whole thing's ridiculous.
Felt like something was different today, and you know, here we are.
Right. Yeah, that's it.
I know what's not different is Louisville and Syracuse trying to play basketball is not different. Are we going to ever get these two together, or what's going to happen here?
I say we call it off now, guys. I mean, Louisville travels all the way up there. They catch a positive test. The young man can't even travel back with the team, does a 12-hour drive home because per NCAA ACC rules, he's not allowed to get on the plane, has to drive all the way back. At least Syracuse got to take their whole team back, but they came all the way to Louisville. We were on the radio yesterday kind of getting ready, doing our show prep, and then 2 seconds before we're supposed to go on, Louisville cancels the game, having another positive case. This is their fourth postponement. And so I imagine basically everybody on the Louisville program has had it or been through it. You could have guys that are doubling up at this point because their first pause was all the way back in the summer. And some of these protocols, you just can't get your hands fully around. Sometimes you feel like they're going to have a two-week pause from this point. We had Vince Tyre on yesterday, the AD at Louisville, and he said there's still a chance they could play on Saturday. So I know so many things are up in the air. You got to be flexible with this schedule. But it's disappointing, especially those teams have to travel so far from Syracuse to Louisville. And then turn around and go right back home. But it definitely looks like Syracuse, New York in Louisville today with all the snow and cold weather we've got.
Let's jump to a couple things here. First of all, I want to follow up on your tweet from yesterday about all of this because it was I vote not to reschedule the game. It's obvious the powers don't want it to happen. Luke, we're already down that road here. There are going to be a lot of games, most notably Virginia Tech is going to miss on probably playing Louisville, probably playing Carolina, potentially playing Florida State. That's just a handful of it. And Clemson too, right, Pac? Well, they got Clemson once at Blacksburg, so take that part back. The aspect of scheduling here, above everything else, Syracuse and Louisville needed that game because somebody was going to win it. Right? That's the other issue we're dealing with.
Yeah, you just don't know what kind of concessions you're going to get in the eyes of the NCAA and qualifying for that tournament or getting in. You're right, though. I mean, time is not on our side. We asked Vince Tyre what the schedule would look like, how you postpone, how you try and fit some of these games in, and he said some of them probably won't happen just because you don't want to play games just for the sake of playing games. You don't want to have guys play back to back to back and try and cram four games in 8 days or something like that. You just don't get a quality game. Guys coming off pauses, we're worried about conditioning anyway, so when you cram all those things together, it just makes it almost impossible. This is what we got, guys, and so we got to maintain some flexibility. The schedule down the stretch, you're just going to have to keep maneuvering. I mean, did you guys think we'd be in a world where UNC was going to schedule games, just sending out a tweet trying to find somebody to play? I mean, this is just such a crazy atmosphere. I mean, even talking to Jeff Walls on the women's side earlier this year, when they're trying to schedule games, he's literally taking out a map, drawing a circle that is with bus ride distance, and then picks up the phone and starts calling coaches to try and get games on the schedule. This is how it is. Louisville was going to have five games left. if they have their full two-week pause, it looks like they'll play Virginia Tech and Virginia in March and miss all the other games in February, potentially play one or no games in the month of February, which seems insane.
All right, Luke, I'm going to tell you this. If Carolina-Louisville does not play Saturday, and Pack noted this already, the game with Boston College has been scrapped, right, Pack, for the Tuesday of next week, right?
Yep.
With Carolina, Roy Williams going to do it again. I mean, I'm going to tell you, Carolina will absolutely do it again because they can get a home game out of it, and they'll play whoever it takes. Because I think the one thing Mark and I learned yesterday from our visit with Coach Williams is, Pack, they want to play. They don't want the break in the schedule. That's my concern with Chris Mack. And, oh, by the way, and I joked about it in the last segment, Luke, we've got this Hope Diamond out here in Malik Williams that we're waiting to see. And that we think it's the last piece in Louisville having some great success. That's also got to be troublesome at some point to what Chris Mack's trying to get done, right?
Certainly, certainly. He's been the one that's been talked about all season as the difference maker for this team. I talked about it in ACC preseason days of the X factor for Louisville is Malik Williams getting healthy. And I made my bold prediction. A lot of Louisville fans didn't like it. But I said, if he's not there, Louisville's going to struggle and they could finish in the bottom half of this league. Now, they've really exceeded my expectations. And I don't know if anybody could have expected Carly Jones to step into the ACC and be as good as he has been. We know about David Johnson. He had flashes last year. But outside of those two, it's a bunch of freshmen and sophomores that are just totally unproven. Charles Midland, the transfer from San Francisco, had been out all year. He's just now starting to play a few minutes. So they haven't been in rhythm. They haven't had their whole team. They're not unique in this league. I mean, you think about teams like Miami, and that makes you feel special if you're a Louisville fan that you've been able to put a full roster out there. But at the same time, you know, this team changes with Malik Williams, and maybe the pause helps him if you want to find the silver lining and glass half full. The one thing you can circle is that Malik Williams gets more time, more reps, and hopefully he's there for the last few games of the season. But he's certainly a difference maker. And you mentioned UNC or some of those teams in the middle. He's smart. Roy Williams is a smart guy. He wants to play games. He wants to get some check marks. Home court advantage, which has kind of blown my mind, but it's been such a big thing in the ACC this year. If he can get those home games and stack some more wins together, you pull yourself from a last four or first four in into solidly in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, everybody's talked about it. UNC has the pieces. That is a scary team if you were going to try and say they're an 11 seed or a 9-8 game. You don't want to play UNC in the NCAA tournament.
Well, here's the other thing. North Carolina's got one win as far as quad ones. Louisville's looking for their first. So that's why you want opportunities to get quality W's. The good news for North Carolina is if they got to go back to Twitter to find a game, I believe their account is verified, Luke. So with that check mark, getting the game should be no problem. If you're unverified, you got no shot getting the game. So North Carolina's got that going for them. I'm going to switch gears on you. Duke looked pretty good last night. Now, I know people are going to scream about, oh, it was Wake Forest. Hey, that's that same Wake Forest team that took Florida State to the brink in Tallahassee where nobody plays them well, right? Duke's now given me back-to-back efforts where I've seen some energy and some want to on the defensive end, totally different than what we've seen for weeks and weeks and weeks with the Blue Devils. And now with this Jalen Johnson story, rearview mirror, he's now going on in the NBA, hopefully has a great career. I thought Duke looked energized last night.
They certainly did, especially in that first half. And you keyed on a point. They played defense. You know, I thought Duke played really well against Notre Dame on the offensive end. They scored 89 points, 89 to 93 in that game. They just couldn't guard anybody. Cormac Ryan has a career high in the first half. Notre Dame, not just blow by you kind of athletes or players in that system. They were getting layups at the rim, wide open threes. Duke couldn't guard any of those guys in a phone booth. And then in this game, they come out with this renewed energy. I'm not saying it's addition by subtraction, but you see these guys locked in, and they really focused in on the scouting report. Wake Forest has been playing better, as you mentioned. They went and absolutely battled with Florida State. The reason Florida State won that game is what they do is impose their will. They beat you up. They're physical. They're long. They're athletic. And what they did in imposing their will was get to the free throw line in that overtime and late in that game. Scotty Barnes has been great in late game situations, but you got a battle from Wake Forest and Duke. You know, I'm not going to say they're going to make this incredible run, but if there's one coach that can get those guys to really believe, of all the coaches that are out there, it's Coach K. He can get those guys to really buy in and say, you know what, with all these rankings, they mean something. We're gonna put a product out there that's going to play hard. We're going to play together, and this group is talented enough to get it done. I mean, nobody's denying that Duke has talent, and Coach K is the guy to get them to believe and really feel like they can make a run late in the season.
All right, Luke, let's drill down here a little bit, though. If we're talking about Duke, we're talking about all these other teams. It's Florida State that beat Virginia by 21 the other night, and yet the Noles aren't in that list of 16 teams released last Saturday. Mark and I spent some time earlier on the show today talking about how's that possible? I mean, there's Iowa, there's Missouri, there's Texas Tech, Oklahoma, all these other teams that Florida State, we feel like on paper, is clearly better. So why not the Noles? Where's the Noles love at this point for a team that's not – they're not just Johnny-come-lately here. They've been here a few years.
I don't get it, guys. What we got to do to get Leonard Hamilton some respect? It's amazing – absolutely amazing to me that Florida State doesn't get more respect. They're as well-rounded a team as we have in the country. The versatility is so incredible from 1 through 5. I mean, you saw Scotty Barnes locking up at 6'9", chasing around 5'9", Kihei Clark, and doing a fantastic job keeping him in front. These guys shoot the basketball great, lead the conference in three-point percentage. Again, they're long, they're athletic, they force steals. What I love about this Florida State team and why I think they're going to go to a Final Four is because there's really no style of play that's going to really hang these guys up. There's no style of play where you say, man, that's going to be a real problem for Florida State. They can go at the zone. They can go at the pack line. They are certainly not the team you want to try and run and gun with. I don't know if they're going to get any respect. The new bloods down there in Tallahassee kind of like it that way. He has built an incredible culture where it is all about team first. Again, Gabbanelli to Patrick Williams, to Devin Vassell, to Scotty Barnes being the next one. You can go back way before Gabbanelli, but you find guys that have bought into a system that don't play 35 minutes a game, that aren't player of the year candidates because they don't play that many minutes, and they buy into Leonard Hamilton's system, and they win, especially down there at Tallahassee.
Luke, who do you think is the hardest team in the ACC to judge? As far as Jekyll and Hyde, you're buying into them, they let you down. You know, you think they stink, all of a sudden they're playing lights out. Who is that number one team for you on February the 18th in this league?
There's two for me. I'll say Georgia Tech. Pittsburgh's right there as well. And I think both those teams have great players that don't bring it every night, or at least don't bring it the same way. I look at Georgia Tech, and I think, man, are there many point guards in this league I'd rather have over Jose Alvarado? I can't name too many. He's a competitor. He's an upperclassman. He's tough. He plays the game within the game. He can really frustrate opposing players because he's crafty. He'll talk a little trash to you. He's very physical. He's always emotional out there, and that fires other guys up. Then I look at the shooters they have around, like Michael DeVoe. I'll take that. I look at Jordan Usher. I know he's got a little injury going on right now. I haven't totally heard what the whole report is, but a great versatile defender, a guy that can rebound. And then, oh, by the way, I call him Little Montrezl Harrell. Moses Wright's a beast, and he can do it all. He's emerging as a scorer. Block shots, rebounds, will absolutely dunk it right on your head. He's an intimidator, plays with a lot of emotion as well. And then they'll turn around, they'll lose to the bottom team in the league. But I do like Georgia Tech a lot. They're a team where when they battle it out with Virginia and they lose by 2 points, you're like, man, that team played right there with them. They could be the third or fourth best team in the league. And then they'll turn around and just won't play with any intensity, won't play with any passion in the next game.
Luke, I'll tell you something funny about Georgia Tech. I used the term risk-reward the other day in describing them, and it got picked up by somebody here locally who called and said, no, what do you mean by risk-reward? I said, it's a high-risk, high-reward situation. They're willing to do things. At times you're thinking, what are they doing? And then it works out. Sometimes they do things and the bottom falls out. I just guess that's the way this team, this particular Georgia Tech team is going to be, right?
I think so. And man, that's so well put. Let's think about Mercer and Georgia State at the start of the season when we don't know what the pandemic is going to bring, what kind of flexibility we need. And Josh Pastner's thinking, I'm going to roll the ball out there when the game comes. I've got a veteran team. We don't need to practice 5-on-5. We don't need to play that way. These guys will be ready to go. That obviously did not work out. If they had those two wins, their record would be incredible. They'd be talked about a lot more. They'd probably be in the NCAA tournament at this point. And it's just been a crazy year for them. I mean, you've seen it from everything from scheduling to the first few games to Josh Pastner's mask and technical and breaking that thing in half, not having a reliable one on the side. It's been all kinds of craziness and ups and downs with Georgia Tech.
See, Luke, the reason I ask you that question, because for me, the answer is Pitt. Anybody that can beat Virginia Tech at home, also lose at home to Notre Dame by 26, lose a game yesterday in NC State without Devin Daniels, in a game you just have to win if you're going to get back to 500 and make any kind of run for the tournament. You just can't lose games like that. I mean, it's just – I'm not saying it's inexcusable because NC State's still got good players – but if you're an NCAA tournament team, that's a game you got to say, hey, not tonight. You know, I know we've lost 10 in a row to you, but that streak comes to a screeching halt. But give the Wolfpack credit. But to me, Pitt's the weirdest team in the league. They're strange.
I think that's a great pick. I mean, I've been really high on them at times. I think about the toughness that team plays with most of the time. And then, you know, the Georgia Tech game's a perfect example. Xavier Johnson fouls out of that game. He gets a technical. He has to go sit down. They're sending guys to the locker room. That toughness really got in the way of them executing their game plan and playing a solid game. You know, Pittsburgh, they can look really, really good when those guards are rolling. They're playing with confidence. They're beating you up. They're a team that when you go through the lane, they're going to not just bump you, they're going to check you. You're going to feel it on every cut, every rebound. And then they turn around and they make boneheaded mistakes. They don't follow the scouting report. They're losing guys in transition, giving up wide open shots. Pittsburgh is just, I mean, they're right there with Georgia Tech. I'm with you, Pac. They're one that's tough to figure out. The consistency just isn't there. And I thought, I really did, guys. I've watched ACC traditions with Coach K started Duke. Obviously, you have Capel go there. He recruits a young class that takes their lumps. They get a year older. You think they're going to come back. Those battle scars are going to help them. And then they just kind of gave you the same mix of stuff. They gave you the same mix of inconsistency. Mm. I love the pieces to the puzzle at Pittsburgh. I thought they had to get a little bit better in the front court. But, you know, Terrell Brown and Hughley, like, I thought they would develop and give this team more of a well-rounded mix. Obviously, Justin Champagne's been incredible. You'd expect them to be much better and much more consistent. I'm with you there.
Yeah. All right, Luke, let's get some priority in our lives. So given the current conditions there in Derby City, are we shoveling the driveway or are we blowing the driveway this morning?
I'll tell you guys, I've lived in Louisville for 10 years. I said this on the radio yesterday. I don't have a snow shovel. So I went around to hardware stores looking for a snow shovel yesterday and trying to find some salt, and I got laughed at. Luckily, I got on the radio yesterday and I was talking about this, saying, man, I can't find salt and I can't find a snow shovel. And my brother ran by one of the hardware stores and snagged one for me. So I have a lot of shoveling to do. We don't get a foot of snow very often, but it's layered with ice. It's a rough wintry mix. I think I'm going to be shoveling my way out for a long time.
Yeah, let Mother Nature take care of it. That's the way I do it. If it gets that bad, you know what?
I like that.
The sun and over 32 is going to hit at some point, Tom. We'll let Mother Nature do all the work. I'm just going to go get some brown water and an ice cube and start a fire with the hounds. See? That's how that works.
See?
That's the game plan.
Packer, once again. Packer, once again. Can you imagine Packer in like the 1700s moving west across the continent? Yeah, that would have been quite a scene.
I would have been a great
cowboy. Fellas, I'll be right over here.
No, man, I'd have been a great cowboy. You kidding me? Baked beans around a fire 7 days a week?
Yeah.
You kidding me? That would have been fantastic.
Fire, brown water. I think he would have had it, Wes.
A killer cowboy hat and a good dog? Hey. Man, I'm in. Where do I sign up for that? And here's the best thing. No social media. I am in. Where do I sign up?
No check marks.
No check marks.
Everybody's got to play their role. You know, you got to have somebody to look after the fire.
That's right. You
Thanks,
got it.
Thanks, Luke. That's what I needed, Hancock, was more buy-in on Packers life. I appreciate it.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
In case you missed accounting, we'll get to that momentarily. But there's some breaking news, Wes. Big story.
University of Virginia has set an American and NCAA record in the 200-meter medley relay in women's swimming. Caroline Gemlich, Alexis Wegner, Alexa Cuomo, Kate Douglas, a time of 132.93. That's not just an ACC or a Virginia deal. That's an American and NCAA record, the 200 medley. Congratulations to the ladies. Yep.
That's moving now. That's even faster than my Ford F-150. That's quick.
Mm-hmm.
Wes, when's the last time you went swimming? When's the last time you went swimming? Do you remember?
Like competitively?
No. No, I just jumping in the pool. Oh. When's the last time you jumped in the swimming pool?
2 years ago? Three, maybe?
Well, that's not bad.
Nah.
You're not going to catch me in the pool.
Certainly not.
Right now.
Well, wait a second. You spent earlier parts of the show telling us about, you know, I'd like to go swimming.
No.
I'd like to do some freestyle and some breaststroke and some butterfly and all this other jazz.
I don't want to go swimming. If you were listening, I said when I was young, I swam all the time. I love to swim. I'm not looking forward to jumping in the pool. That's.
Were you at the Bermuda Run Club pool a lot?
Never. Ever. Ever. Only time I went to the Bermuda Run, I'm going to be completely honest with you. The only time I ever went to the Bermuda Run Golf Club swimming pool is when we broke into it in the middle of the night to get all and stole all the toilet paper so we could roll houses when I was a vagrant teenager nuisance. Because they used to have storage of all they used to have all the storage of all the toilet paper at the swim club. So that's what we jumped over the fence and stole all that stuff. And then we rolled everybody's houses. Then we were in denial. Go, I don't know what you're talking about. That was back in my youth. But in the pool.
Josh Macri just saved this program, by the way.
Why is that?
Because he said, let's get to accounting. Let's get to accounting.
You asked, listen, you have always vowed we will be a show of transparency. I'm not hiding anything. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not necessarily proud of it
all. Do we really need to know you stole toilet paper from the Bermuda Run pool as a child?
Wait a minute. Let's not pretend like that's some criminal offense. I mean, every time we go and get shots of Vince Tyre and Satterfield and Mac, I mean, all they do is roll the neighborhood. I mean, those are grown adults. I was a knucklehead back when I was 14, 15 years old, ripping off the Bermuda Run Country Club, Swim Club, toilet paper, storage hut. Not proud of it. It's the truth.
So, friends, have you heard on this show every week we do this thing called accounting?
Man, you guys, everybody wanting to hide now. The only one person being completely transparent on this program. Let me just put that out there on the record.
Okay. You good?
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
All right. All right. Off to accounting we go. I'll go first.
Of course. Please.
I moved Florida State to the top of the chart this week after the 21-point victory over Virginia on Monday night. Cavaliers, don't worry, you're second. Hokies are third. We hope to see you soon. Same for Louisville, Clemson. Anytime y'all want to come on back, we're ready. Georgia Tech, who is scheduled to play Miami this weekend. North Carolina, Duke, round out the 8. Syracuse at 9. Notre Dame, 10. NC State, if you won, you'd be up. You won. Pitt would be up if they'd won. It was going to be touch and go right in that neighborhood. Wake, Miami, Boston College round out my 15. So, there you have it.
I don't really have a problem with it because mine's actually quite similar. I hate to be boring about it.
Yeah, but we have only a couple changes there.
Yeah, yep. Kind of surprised. Here's my deal. Of course, I always give you a sweet 16, and that is included this week. Number one, because I saw it my own very eyes on Monday night. If that game was close, I probably could have kept Virginia at 1. But you know what? That was just a woodshed job. That was a definitive statement maker. So I've got Florida State 1, still like the Hoos at 2. Hokies need to play some. They're at 3. Clemson's on pause. They're at 4. If you're wondering why I got the Tigers at 4, said earlier, they've got more quad 1 and quad 2 wins than everybody in the league. They also beat Louisville, who's at 5. North Carolina stays steady at 6. I've been impressed with the Duke boys. They look pretty good the last two nights on the road. They got Duke moving up. Georgia Tech, still like them. They're at 8. Syracuse is 9. I wish they would have played the Louisville game last night. And then I think we're kind of the exact same. Notre Dame's at the 10 spot. NC State moves up with their win over Pitt, who drops to 12. The Swiss are at 13. Miami is at 14. And I'm afraid to say that Boston College is etched in stone for the rest of the year at 15. And 16th, Sweet 16, Josh Pastner's cracked face shield all by itself is on the 16th spot. And there it is.
Oh, God.
Not only does he smash it, he puts it back on for second half good looks. And wouldn't you know it, Georgia Tech let that one get away from last Friday night. But the face shield makes the 16 this week. So there you go. Accounting. Locked and loaded. It is a fluid situation. And it will appear on social media, and people who do not watch and or listen to the show will rip it to shreds, having no earthly idea what we're talking about.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
A native Atlantan, Carl Bentz became Georgia Tech's first African-American player to receive a basketball scholarship. Although he spent just one season with the Yellow Jackets, Benz left an indelible mark, leading the squad in rebounding. After his time on the flats, Benz would go on to earn his PhD in organizational management. Packer and Durham honor Carl Benz and all the black athletes that paved the way in the ACC as we celebrate black history, always here on ACC Network.
You know, we've been doing these tributes this week. I mean, it's amazing to look back, isn't it, Wes? I mean, some of the names, you kind of forget, and all of a sudden it just hits, and you're like, I mean, a thousand things go rushing through your head in terms of players and games and incredible influencers in this league.
Yeah, Carl Benz came along at a time in the 1 year. He also was a guy that, you know, In a place like Georgia Tech, whose history of integration in athletics is later than other schools, and significantly later when it come to some of the football situations nationally, Georgia Tech also had a black quarterback, Eddie McShan, who was the first black quarterback in the Deep South. Came from Gainesville, Florida to Atlanta, Georgia for a chance to play quarterback. And I got to know Eddie, and great guy, unbelievable stories, but also, you know, it was a different path. It was a different path in college athletics for black athletes, and it's nice we can pay tribute to guys like Eddie and Carl, and, you know, Pac, you and I got to know Gilbert McGregor at Wake Forest, you know, during the course of our years in the ACC, a fine gentleman. That's
Davis.
The kind of storylines that, you know, Charlie Davis, oh man, what a player he was. You know, and there are a lot of paths. The black athlete in the South was a different experience in a different time in the 60s and early 70s, up until the early 1970s at some institutions. So it's important we share those stories, important to hear their voice. You know, we lost Dr. Larry Hopkins this year, right, who played football at Wake Forest, who was such an integral part of successful teams there. That's a guy whose story and his path is really, really important. And it's important to today's student athlete. And, you know, we had Darcy Bourne's story yesterday
awesome.
From In Play, and an amazing story of voicing you know, her powerful voice as it relates to racism in the country and racism in England. And for Darcy Bourne, it's a different path at a different time, but it's not unlike the path one cut of prejudice primarily that those athletes in the 60s and 70s went through. And it's interesting to draw the parallels and see kind of, and I'm glad we're able to spotlight some of these people that crossed that frontier first in the Atlantic Coast Conference for sure.
And we should all listen. You know what? I personally will never understand that fight. Never will.
right? Mm-hmm. So the most important thing to do is to listen, be open-minded, embrace it, and I keep saying all the time, get better, right? Get better. We can all get better.
That's it.
Across the board.
We spent some time this morning across the board with Florida State. This is the Atlantic Coast Conference Network. We've talked about that. We fly the flag a little bit here for the membership and the institutions.
We fly it exclusively.
That's when you turn it on. That's
We fly it exclusively. Let's not even cut to the chase. We're going to spin it to the positive. We're going to also be honest about it. And we're going to be honest about this. I think Florida State's getting hosed. Let's get right to the chase.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that the list comes out from the NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Committee with 16 institutions on it last Saturday and does not have this team. It's unbelievable. I mean,
stupid.
When you look at all the elements, Pack, how does that happen?
I don't know. I know it was only a snapshot, but quite frankly, we've had two COVID pauses with this team, and maybe, I'm reaching for an excuse for the committee. Maybe the pauses had something to do with it, because if you've been watching this team play, you cannot deny how talented they are. There's no way in the world there are 16 teams in this country better than Florida State. Now, you can give me a metric, a BPI, if you will, and say, well, here's the reason we can justify A over B over C. Oh, that's fine. But if you watch this team play, there are not 16 teams in America better than Florida State, period.
Well, I mean, you got to be thinking about how do they fit with some of the teams that were on that list, right?
Right.
Now, BPI, we've had some fun with BPI the last couple of days. Florida State is already four more wins ahead of what BPI thought they would be at this time, right? They're 7-2 against Quad 1 and Quad 2 this season. That's really important to remember as the season wears on, and especially right now when in comparison to these other teams. So let's start with some of the teams. Now, all of these teams we're getting ready to show you were on the list of 16, okay? And we're going to start with the Iowa Hawkeyes out of the Big Ten. Best league in the country, right, Pac?
I agree.
No questions asked. Big Ten's had the best year.
Big Ten, Big 12 are the two best leagues. Big Ten's got the best quality depth of any conference in America.
There you go. All right. BPI favors Iowa to beat Florida State right now. Now, look, Iowa's had a good year. Has Iowa had the on-off situation Florida State has? Absolutely not. Iowa's been able to kind of continue to play. So they've been front of mind, right? And I think that's something you bring up, and I agree with it. I think when you're on pause, people forget you. And Florida State went on pause a couple times. But to say Iowa would beat Florida State, I don't know about that now.
Like I said, if my life depended on it, that's kind of how I look at these kind of things. And we're playing a neutral site. I'll take Florida State. You can have Iowa all day long. Luka Garza, great player. Iowa's a really good team, but come on, man. Who are you fooling on that? Please.
All right. Now, deeper team, deeper league, 9 Q1 games opposed to Florida State, who's only played 5. All right. Let's move on. They played Virginia the other night. Now, Virginia's on the list, right?
It's three seed.
Let's throw the Cavaliers numbers. Yeah. They were up there, and BPI favors Virginia to win by 3. They lost by 21. Okay. Now,
BPI just slightly off on that one. Just bare.
Well,
just,
they almost they ever really got, miss. They always win.
BPI always win. Almost got that one right. Virginia by 2.7 points. They lost by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Come on.
Now, you know, Cavaliers, Seminoles, I'd like to see it again. Hope we see it 3 times, actually. You know? All right. Here, and we're going to dive around the league. That's really the only ACC team we're going to measure Florida State against, because they're the one that was on the sheet. All right, here's the next one. Texas Tech, Big 12, Pac just said it a moment ago. Really good league. Chris Beard, good coach.
Great coach.
Got McClung, got guys who can go make plays. They got a little depth to them, play about 8 guys comfortably. BPI says Texas Tech would beat Florida State by almost 2 points.
But, you know, forget the BPI. You know what? Quad one and quad two, whether you like it or not, is the gospel. I mean, that is a critical number, right? Texas Tech is sub 500 against quad one, quad two. Sub 500.
Right.
So
let that marinate. Florida State is 7-2.
Right. The Noles are 7-2. So, like I said, no disrespect. Right. Beard's a great coach, and Texas Tech's got a really good club, but they don't beat Florida State. They're not coming close to them.
All right. Next, the Big Orange of Tennessee.
Good club.
The Volunteers.
They're all good. Yeah. Again, 500, 500 against quad one and quad two, and I don't believe the SEC is as good as the ACC this year in hoops. I like Rick Barnes' team. They play good defense. Their offense is skittish at best. And if you're telling me we're going to play at a neutral site, I don't even think this is a hard game to pick, quite frankly. I really don't.
Yeah. All right. Next three on our list here are all Big 12 teams. Okay? We're going to start with Lon Kruger in Oklahoma. Because it's a good basketball team.
Yes, sir.
And it's a team. I mean, the next three teams are really good teams. Really good. But I think Florida State's as good as these next three.
I'd love to see red hot Oklahoma and red hot Florida State. I think that would be a really fun game. Now, that to me, given how the way Oklahoma's playing right now, that would be a terrific matchup. Lon Kruger is a great coach, right? Taking five different teams of the tournament, a couple Final Fours, big time coach.
Yep. West Virginia, another good team.
Terrific.
By the way, Huggins got those guys playing too now.
And different this year because they're a good offensive team. Maybe not necessarily as good as they've been in the past on the defensive side because you think of Press Virginia with the way they used to play. But Huggy Bear's got a good club up there in Morgantown. Of course, they're fresh off of losing a tight game against Oklahoma in overtime. Like I said, Oklahoma's hot. West Virginia's got a good club too. I'd love to see this game too. Great athletes all over the place. Yeah. But again, West Virginia, sub 500 when you look at the quad one number. So just saying, big picture.
Texas, same thing, by the way. Also sub 500 against quad one. Longhorns in a scenario, 3-5 against quad one. Florida State's got three quad one wins. They're 3-2. Is depth going to matter more than record, or is it more quad one games? You know,
well, I do think the committee's
going to put something out there, and it's going to be judged on some interesting details. I think.
No, you know, listen, we talk about the eye test all you want, but then your numbers in quad one and quad two. I thought the committee made it pretty clear Saturday when they came out with their 16 teams that you know what, how you do in that quad one, quad two department really is paramount. Mm-hmm. So that's why when we keep talking about games like Syracuse and Louisville not being played last night, it's a missed opportunity for two teams that are desperate to get a quad one W, who regardless of who wins. Yep. You just want to have the opportunity to get those down the stretch. So that's why we made such a big deal out of that, and that's why we spent some time yesterday defining what quad one is, what quad two is, because you're going to hear that term a bunch the next 3 weeks. And if you're thinking, oh, I hear these guys talking about the net, the quad, and ones and twos, you got to know those because those are really going to be important trying to determine a seed as we get the men to Indianapolis and the ladies down to the great state of Texas.
All right. Now, on the way out the door here, we will show you Missouri, and we will continue to wonder what happened to allow the Tigers on this list.
I have no idea. This one, to me... I don't trust Missouri. I don't get it. And your guess is as good as mine on this.
I have no idea.
You know.
I just...
They're fresh off losing to Georgia.
Something went wrong. Yeah. I mean, something happened there, and I'm not quite sure. But Konzo Martin, good guy.
Oh, yeah. Good coach.
But not a team.
And
not,
all those
somebody
teams...
that I think is a...
Wes, and for the record, for folks who are watching us, we're not dissing any of these non-conference opponents. They're all legit. They're all worthy of 3, 4, or 5 seeds in the NCAA tournament. The point of all this is
how Florida State continues to get snubbed by the AP voters, who eventually came to their senses and got them ranked in the top 25. And here we are talking about, hey, if you're really taking inventory of the 16 best teams in America, I mean, listen, you don't have to put Florida State in the top five. I get that. You may not even put them in the top 10. But there is no way in the world you're going to tell me there's 16 teams in America better than Florida State. Because there are not.
There you go.
In college basketball. There are not.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Chester just woke up for the first time in 3 hours, looked at me like, are you still on? Gosh. Look at the boys. They're just out of it, man. They're out.
Yep. Boys doing well, aren't they?
Oh, they're rolling. There you go. Full day today. All right, let's do it. One stat per game. We got the ladies in action tonight. Knock on wood, God willing. Get these games in. Hope so.
Yep. NC State, Wake Forest, Wolfpack and Deacons. We had Gina Conti on the show a couple days ago. Top seven scorers for the Wolfpack all average 42.5% or better from the floor. There are only 12 men in the conference that shoot better than that.
How important is this game for Wake Forest? You're talking about sitting there on the good side, the bad side, the bubble, depending on who you ask, where you look.
Yep.
Talk about an opportunity to really, really make life feel good. Yep. You go upset NC State, and life would be tremendous for Coach Hoover and company, right? Yep. This is a big game for Wake Forest tonight.
Absolutely. Next on the docket, Carolina and Clemson. Tonight starts a stretch for Courtney Banghart and the Tar Heels, where every game remaining on their schedule is against a team with a winning record. And you see that Charlie Cream, who puts together the bracketology for the ladies' college basketball tournament, has Carolina listed as last four in as they host Clemson tonight.
Pressure's on
Clemson tonight, rather.
Yep, pressure's on. I mean, this is why you play late February, and it matters. They all do now. They are all important.
Got that right. This game two of our doubleheader tonight on ACC Network follows Georgia Tech at Florida State, and that is Louisville visiting Pittsburgh. Louisville has won 16 straight against Pitt in their last 10. They've won by an average of almost 27 points. The closest margin of victory for Jeff Walls' team has been 15, and that was 4 years ago.
Dana Evans will be great. Louisville's right now on the one line. NC State is not. I don't really understand that. They both should be on there, but Louisville just continues to roll. Yep. And currently they are the team to beat in the ACC.
Yep. Other ball game to spotlight, Boston College is at Miami tonight. Joanne Barnaby McNamee has guided Boston College. This has been a tough year for BC. I mean, it's just one of those things where the virus has gotten a hold of their program, positive test. Tonight will be their third game since January 17th. It's Miami's eighth game in the same time frame.
I would say if you're doing inventory of the ACC, of which basketball program, men and women, has been affected the most, it is without question BC. Now, listen, I know Duke and Virginia shut things down with the ladies, but if you think about what Coach Mack's gone through, they've won one conference game. I don't need to tell you about what's happened on the men's side with the dismissal of a coach and Winston Tabbs is out and COVID and didn't play for 3 weeks and the four scholarship guys and the Martians. I mean, it has been just one of those years that you're just bumping your head against the wall at BC thinking, hey, can we just get to the finish line the way this year is going?
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.